Rob, I thought I'd start by providing you with the final numbers for 2019.
Terrific. Thank you.
So we had, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, I can. I just turned the volume up a little bit. I just wanted to make sure. So in 2019, for the final year on new money, we were at $21,458,000.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So of that new money, $7,210,000 was from new clients.
Right. That was
and the then, right, that didn't change from the, our last call to and that actually, I believe, was a slight increase from last year clients' new money as well. I think we were around $5 million the year before. Now the new fee, we were at $8,186,000 for 2019.
Okay.
That
was pretty close too, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, we did add a little bit at the year end, but not much. For 2020, right now, year to date for new money, we're at $758,000. And year-to-date new fees were at $883,405. And from meeting notes, I wanted to confirm with you, it looked like we were going to have our new money goal list for this year, for 2020, was going to be $30 million. Does that sound correct to you? From our
yes.
Okay. Okay. Then the other thing I wanted to go over is we, in our last call, we reviewed the monthly call calendar topics. You kind of gave us some suggestions. So we've made those updates. We made those updates, and one of the things we've been doing is sending the 12 months. We've basically did it for 2020, and we've sent that out to the clients. Whether it's during their monthly call email reminder or their quarterly call or their portfolio review, so that they have those topics each month.
That's a great idea. I'm really pleased with that.
Hoping that if they look at it ahead of time, they may even start asking questions ahead of, you know, beforehand. Also, I listed some of our team goals this year.
Yep.
When we're, especially the first quarter, as we're going through all of our quarterly reviews and our portfolio review meetings, we are looking to make sure, if at all possible, every client is a fee relationship and or increase their fees, depending on how much they have under fee. And even more specifically within that, mutual fund, we have some clients that majority of what they have with us are mutual funds.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that they UBS is going to clean shares, so we're expecting eventually that they will be removing us receiving the trailers. They haven't said when or if so, but we're expecting that to be next. So any client that's in mutual funds, we're looking to see what other investment options we might have for them.
Okay.
Okay. And then the SECURE Act is something that we feel like has provided us with some opportunities, whether it's Roth conversions or life insurance. And then we're looking to do some workshops, like small workshops with clients and an estate planner.
I think you're right. I don't, I apologize for not being an expert on the SECURE Act. I know it eliminated the stretch. Where does life insurance fit in?
That is one of the potential estate planning tools to, because of elimination of the stretch and the beneficiaries having to take it out over a 10-year period, it's a way to help offset the tax burden.
Meaning?
So you would have a life insurance policy that the beneficiaries would be the same beneficiaries of your retirement account, and it would be enough to cover, and you could do like a term policy, and it would be enough to cover the tax burden of the having to pay the taxes on having to take your IRA funds out over a 10-year period.
Okay.
So that would be a way for the beneficiaries still to receive 100% of what they would have, you know, if they didn't have to take it out over a 10-year period.
Okay, so you're just ensuring that they don't get less than their original stretch would have provided net after taxes.
That's correct.
Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. That's one of the strategies. You know, and like you, because the SECURE Act just, you know, was signed at the end of the year, we're still, you know, studying and learning about the SECURE Act. But that is one of the recommendations that we're hearing estate planners. The other one is Roth conversions to avoid, you know, so that that they won't have to take required minimum distributions, the beneficiaries.
Right.
So that's the other one that we're hearing as well.
Okay.
All right. And then there's another one that has to do with trust, a conduit trust, but I really can't speak very eloquently on that yet. But those are the three that we have been reading and have been mentioned by estate planners.
Yeah, this is a really a good opportunity to get your best people in a room listening to you guys teach them choices. That's all you're doing. You're giving them choices. You know, they can roll it. You know, they can declare their beneficiary for their IRA a family foundation or lots of different things you can do as choices to eliminate taxes. Many of them, you know, they eliminate the taxes, but they don't get your client anymore, you know, the beneficiaries any more money. So, but I think it's an opportunity to dust off the estate planning, which wasn't interesting for quite a while now, and make it interesting. So you might want to make that a topic, you know, for your 24-month calendar, which you probably have. But just
we have. That's on every one that we've got. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it's going to take a minute. It took me a minute, right?
And oh,
I'm
sure.
In business. To understand right. What you're saying about life insurance. The life insurance is a good idea if, in fact, your intention is to get the net of the same amount of money to the person. So I think when you explain it, make sure you explain it that way.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. And so far in our monthly calls and meetings that we've had with clients, we've mentioned the SECURE Act. We've mentioned the two pieces, one of them being RMD 70.5 to 72, and then, of course, the elimination of the stretch. And we've stated to them that there is reviews of different strategies to try to help with the elimination of the stretch for the beneficiaries, and that we're still working with estate planners to be able to provide you, you know, with options. So we're not really stating the options with the clients yet, as we're continuing to work through it ourselves. But we want them to hear it from us first about the SECURE Act.
Exactly.
So, Rob,
we had
two things. First of all, we had a dozen clients that were turning 70 and a half this year.
Wow, okay.
So on December 20th, when this was signed, you know, that was a breath of fresh air for them.
Yeah, so they bumped. That's pretty good. So they did it, for, even though it was in the year, they gave them the opportunity to move to 72 then.
Mm-hmm. So nice. I think we were out ahead on that. In several instances, we weren't the only retirement account that they had. So hopefully we were in touch with them before the other advisor was.
Excellent.
Yeah, as new as this is, what Tracy's been talking about with the stretch, we've made this a part of almost every conversation we've had. Given the demographics of our book, you know, I mean, that it is a big deal. So I do think this is an opportunity for us, and it's also an opportunity, you know, maybe for us to consolidate some of those retirement accounts if these conversations aren't being had with the other advisor.
Right. And I always think that
since they put that $30 million goal on me, I got to come up with something to get some new money in here.
Absolutely. They always, you know, I've always, because of the excess taxes on retirement accounts, I've always felt that they were a great source for charitable giving.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't build that side up any more than it already is, at least give away the amount of appreciation that you get in the account. Just so it just doesn't, you know what I'm saying? It's just, you want to build up the other side, and you want to build up the, you want to build up the tax-free side as much as you can before retirement. And after retirement, you want to build up the the before tax side as much as you can. It seems to me, anyway. And so I think for many of your clients that are charitably inclined, the opportunity, you know, they got the choice between highly appreciated stock and their $100,000 they can give from their retirement account. And, you know, for, it's just, that's where, you know, you come in. You come in and tell them what's the right thing to do for them, what makes the most sense. And it's a wonderful opportunity. And you know, for many of your clients, it's never going to outspend their money, nor, you know, it's just a question of how much they're going to give their kids.
You know, a Roth conversion may make sense for part of the money.
Yeah. So that's a math game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But that gets us in with the CPA.
I think it's a great way for us to solidify not only our estate planners' relationship through all the SECURE Act, you know, getting them in front of their clients with us. Also, and if they see us doing this with our clients, that could help the referral process. But also, in cases where that is recommended that they do a Roth conversion, it's the CPA as well. So it really can help with a lot of building a lot of our relationships.
Was there any benefit the wealthier clients coming out of that SECURE Act? Except for the 72?
72 is the only thing that we see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they gave a little and they took quite a bit. I mean, theoretically, that's quite a bit back, right?
It is, but the insurance companies were the biggest lobbying group for, on that.
Interesting. Because they wanted to sell more life insurance?
Of course.
That's a riot.
Yeah. That's Washington.
Pretty small.
Yeah, that's just the actuarial side of it, moving it back made sense. And whoever came up with 70 and a half anyway.
Oh, yeah, I know. That's so dumb.
So the Senate version was 75, and the House version that they passed in May was 72. So they settled on 72, which is, that's 72 works.
Yeah, I mean, 75 would be great, but, you know, it doesn't hurt us to have them have some distributions either, you know, from a cash flow point of view. And, you know, just, I mean, a lot of people don't, unfortunately, they don't get much of that money in their lifetime if, in fact, they move it to 75, because they're out of here, you know, 78.
So these events come along every once in a while, and which gives us an opportunity to have a different type of discussion with the clients that also engages their other advisors.
Right. Well, I appreciate the feedback personally, because I haven't had a chance to study it. So thank you. What else, what other initiatives for the team?
Those were the initiatives that I had listed here for 2020.
Mm-hmm. So let's go by director, okay? And
okay.
See, you know, to me, leading the team, you want each director to have at least one or if not two initiatives themselves, right?
Right.
So let's start with the planning director, director of planning. They're clearly involved with the Secure Act.
Right.
The state, et cetera. So is there any goals set for number of plans done, comprehension of plans? Plan, you know, more plan updates, or is that going to be kind of part of the Secure Act? What's the plan there?
The actual numbers for financial plans is going to be a part of Secure Act, but it's also going to be a part of the monthly calls, the building up to where the client will end up having a financial plan, whether it's being updated or created.
Okay. So do you have a number where you are now number of percentage of plans of clients with a plan, and then what your goal will be by the end of the year?
We do not. I don't know if you remember the conversation we had about the financial plans, but that number is really skewed because we thought it was really low. It was like around 30%, if I'm remembering correctly, Kristen. But it's including each individual SEP participant. I mean, it was it's a very difficult, the way they process it is very difficult for us to actually know. So what we're doing is actually, as we're meeting and going through topics, if it's one of our top clients, we want to make sure we have something in place for them.
Okay, two things. One, they're not doing planning by house version. Want to write a memo up the food chain and tell them that when you look for a percentage of clients with a plan, it's all skewed. Recommendation,
mm-hmm.
Household them. Do it by household. Okay?
Right.
I mean, one of the things that you don't understand oftentimes when we're sitting out here in the field is that they really don't know what the hell's going on. And our job is to be a lobbyist for better firm operations and process and accountability and all the rest of it. You know, bad input in, bad input out. So if they're not householding, if they're, you know, counting a SEP as a household and all that crazy stuff, you need to be there because somebody isn't raising an alarm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not being fairly, it's doing you no good to have that number.
Right.
Because it's irrelevant, okay? So you want everything to be relevant, right? Everything to be good. So just set type up a nice memo and send it all the way up to the direct, whoever's in charge of financial planning, and to national sales director and everybody else. District director, and just say, hey, here's a really good idea. Here's a real opportunity. Here's the challenge or the problem. And it's not, you're not going over anybody's boss. This is just I never noticed that. You guys care and you notice, so let's fix the problem.
Okay.
So we want to have an accurate number. So you guys will know. So what I would do then, if you don't have an accurate number, is I would do it by hand.
Okay.
I would know who had done a plan and who didn't. You don't have that many clients. You don't have to do them. You really want to do the, start with big clients and go down.
Sounds good.
And, it's kind of one of those things that you can do on a spreadsheet where you're trying to maximize your penetration of clients. It's going to tell a story. If we don't have a financial plan that tells us an important part of the story, that we've got an opportunity here to penetrate a really big client that hasn't done a plan. Maybe they've done away and went away from us. Maybe they haven't. Maybe we don't have all the assets. Maybe this is the way to get all the assets. So it's just one of those triggers, like when somebody says, I don't want 12-4-2. That's a flashing light,
mm-hmm.
that says, there's something wrong here. Okay, so just we want to pin that number down and then track it like a demon, and just because planning generates business. It's been proven over and over. So we want to get the maximum amount of revenues from existing clients, and then a few more large clients. And that will come. Okay?
Okay.
So implementation is the 24-month calendar, which you're doing. It's also the enthusiastically endorsed list. So I would put that in under implementation. As
okay.
a goal year. All right. So that would be
okay.
the director of implementation, 24-month calendar, and then enthusiastically endorsed list, a master list, and then a list for each player.
Okay.
And sometimes, you can have an enthusiastically endorsed list for where one – city, Louisville maybe, where people don't want to go across, they live in Indiana, they don't want to go across the river, or they live in, people,
right.
There's some geography involved with working with CPAs and other people. You may want to have some geographic preferences for different enthusiastically endorsed people.
We ran into that this year.
12-4-2, the director of brand management, you're talking 12-4-2 and rapid response to problems. But it's also that person is in charge of making sure that the meetings that you think are necessary get scheduled and are scheduled and people do attend. So that person's kind of in charge of the calendar overall.
Is that the
team.
Service? Is that the VP of service?
That's the VP of service, yes.
Okay.
So you all agree on what on what meetings you're going to have, both during the year, like planning meetings, and then weekly meetings. When are they going to happen? What's going to be at each meeting? And then that person becomes the person in charge of doing that. So one of the goals for the year would be to have, you know, efficient calendar integrity. Or, you know, how many meetings are we attending, and how many meetings is everybody on board with? That doesn't mean we take attendance. It just means that, you know, we're not skipping the Monday meeting, or we're not skipping the Friday meeting. We're, as a team, we're really into it. And if we're going to grow, we got to have a growth meeting. Okay, got to have a meeting just for growth. Because it's just too big a topic. I mean, it's huge. So then we get to the director of growth, and there, you know, you guys, I mean, if you want to grow by 30 million, that's a different game than growing what you've done all the time. So we're going to have different results. We have to implement different behaviors. So we have to ramp up the things that are going to work, either do more of what's working already or do something new. Okay, and it probably means both. I like to attack problems with multiple approaches so as, you know, sometimes different things work, right? Different circumstances, different things work. So you may be, the number one way to increase your business is getting introductions from existing clients. It's always the same. The second is from centers of influence. The third is niches with centers of influence inside each niche. And then there's everything else. And that would be a mastermind group, social prospecting through boards of directors, LinkedIn, and but getting introductions from existing clients is the number one way. How you do that is up to you. You can do it with, like, hope. And hope is not a strategy, so you may want to have something other than hope. You may not want to ask, but then, okay, so what could we do if we're not going to ask? Well, let's implement the idea of making sure that each client that's ever given us an introduction is in each folder, and we look at that, we put down the date they introduced us to a client, that became a client, and the date they opened up the account, and then thank them for the introduction, preferably on the day that the account was opened. That's going to trigger them to want to give you another introduction. If you don't want to ask, that's a way of reminding them that they did it, it worked, they made three people happy, and they may want to do it again. If you want to ask, then the best way is through the VIPSA process, which is simply reminding them how much they valued what it is that you're doing for them by asking them the question. What is it that you valued? What are the three things you valued the most with your experience working with us over the last year? And that gets them in the mood then to give. Because when they think about it, they become kind of enthusiastic about it. Then, when you ask them to do some brainstorming, they're kind of in the mood to do it. And if they have somebody off the top of the head, they're going to give them to you. If not, they'll probably come up with some names that are probable. And probables are better than none. Okay, so you guys decide, and then that's a director of growth responsibility to hold everybody accountable to whatever it is that you decide you're going to do. Okay, if you want to ask, then you've got a quota for ask. Okay, if you don't want to ask, then you've got a quota for thank yous. The more thank yous you give, the more introductions you're going to get. Hoping for random introductions will not generate any more introductions than you got this year. You'll get some, but they'll be random, and they won't necessarily be what you want, and they won't be the volume you need. Okay. John, questions on that?
No. I got it.
Got it? Now, one of the things that I'm recommending that I never really put a number on is I'm recommending that you get yellow folders. Those are prospect folders. And everybody on the team that is in the business of acquiring relationships has 20 prospects. And you're not going to start out with 20, probably have less than that. But you build a folder for them as if they just became a client. Now, you don't necessarily give them a 90-day free look. You're just reminding yourself every month to call them until you close them. Well, sometimes when you're given an introduction, maybe you close them the first time, right? So they're a very short time being a prospect. Maybe it takes you a month. But with people with 10 and 15 and 20 and 30 million, it takes time. And one of the biggest problems we have is the failure to follow up. So you want to be calendar conscientious in terms of following up and have build yourself a system for doing it. One of the systems can be a spreadsheet, you know, where you put it on your Outlook. Another one is simply putting it into the scheduler as if they're a client and calling them on a monthly basis and putting all the data in there. And sometimes you need the 90-day free look, which is to give them a folder, engage them in the whole process, and then show them that it works. Okay, so the folder thing, I think, makes it the prospecting as concrete as the 12-4-2s. And that's what I think is missing for a lot of FAs. It's just not concrete enough. We used to have just little flip cards, right? Little cards in a box for prospects. I think our prospects today are bigger, more important. So doing our due diligence, Googling them, finding out all about them, having a folder is a good thing. It takes a little time, but you know, you're not going to put anybody in there that's not a real deal. So maybe we start out with 5 and then we try and build it up over time. Questions? You like it?
Yeah, we've come a long way since the index cards, haven't we?
Yeah. Well, they work, you know, but then it was, you know, open an account, do a transaction, throw away the card and
move on.
Put them in a book and put the book behind you and move on to the next and get the next account, right?
Yeah.
100 shares of Duke Power on the offering. Long way since then. Long way.
I thought it was Mid-South Utilities.
That's it.
Yeah. And an offer every month for that.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy, wasn't it? The utilities are constantly coming to market. They never do now, do they?
Oh, wow.
different time. And the final is leadership. And leadership is goal. If I were you guys, I'd have a folder for each member of the team, meet on a monthly basis, put it in just like a 12-4-2, and work on these. You know, the leader holds everybody accountable for the goals that we've set here today and other ones that you think are viable, as well as their personal and developmental goals. And then it becomes a very personal relationship where you act as a mentor coach for each member of the team. So that's the leader obviously is accountable for all the numbers and ultimately the success of the venture and the goal of 30 million. But you're not starting at scratch. Your baseline is 20 million. 23, 24 million. And so you need to add probably, you know, 10 million, maybe 8 million. We've been very blessed, of course, with a good stock market, which is not always something you can count on. But net new is net new, right? So that's what we have to go after. Questions?
No.
I think we're good.
You good?
I think so. So,
okay,
please, we have one more call as a team?
Correct. February is our last call as a team. And then I think
okay. You
and John and Rob will then have your monthly calls starting in March.
We'll start that.
Okay, excellent. All right, we'll put this to work and then give me some good feedback for the next call.
Right.
See if there's anything that you guys came up with that you think is, you're going to adopt it or not adopt it or whatever. Make your adjustments, just like you did with you made it a 12-month calendar to the public. That's great. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the little, you know, that's the stuff that's fun for all of us, right? We're actually going to use this instead of, well, that's a good idea, and then we don't use it.
Right.
So, yeah, way to go. No, it's working. Nice job.
Well, we talked about that this morning. We're a year into it. And we talked about the challenges and how it's working, and I think the consensus was that it's working very well. What I heard from Kristen and Tracy is they're very process-driven, so I think this is wonderful for them.
Yeah, you know, I likened it to when we first get together with a team, and not yours, but many, it's an emergency room, and it's a triage team, and they work together great, but there's no forward thinking. It's just deal with the emergency as it comes on that day. And we move from that to, let's say, an internist general practitioner's job, which is planning. You have appointments. It's scheduled, but you have too many clients. You know, the average physician has 2,000 patients, so it's still chaos. There's some planning, but the team is still worn out, beat up, and tired at the end of every day, knowing that they never can catch up. And then finally we get to, you know, the supernova set mindset, which is a concierge, limited number of patients. And the idea I liked was this idea of anticipation, and in the medical field, it's preventive medicine. You know, that's the hot topic of the day. But in reality, if we as a society can spend more time on helping people prevent by not smoking, by staying at a reasonable fitness level, et cetera, then we'll prevent a lot of unnecessary deaths, heartaches, and costs for our patients. And so that's where we are. So we go from the total chaos to the plan, process, and ritual, and an anticipation and preventive medicine for our clients. And that's where the planning comes in, and where you know with your 12-month calendar, you're preventing them from making either not making a decision or making a poor decision, which can both be bad. So I think that analogy can help you, John, with kind of the whole, when working with a new client, I think that makes it kind of clear as to what's the difference between us and the rest of the world out there. Your competition is either a triage unit or a general practitioner with 2,000 clients. And they see that because they have to sit in that waiting room for an hour waiting, an extra hour. So it just isn't customized. And the person really can't know you because he just has too many patients. Whereas this, even though they give you a physical, even though they might even give you a financial physical, right? They still don't have time to really know you. And the 12-4-2s give you a chance to really know the client. And that's the, so I think that's a, to me, that's a great way of presenting the difference and making it dramatically different when they're looking at when you're doing a beauty contest, which most are doing when they get into $10 million numbers, they're gonna meet with three or four teams before they make the decision. And I think this is this puts you head and shoulders above the rest. So, you like that?
I do like that. I like the analogy.
Good. Yeah. And we sell with stories, right? We sell with analogies. We gotta make it something they can understand. And I think that makes it as clear as any story I've told. And we've used it a lot of times before, but I haven't kind of put the whole thing together. And I like that. I just did that this past week.
Yeah, well, my daughter was home last week, and she went to see my concierge doctor. And then she also had a dermatologist appointment. And when I have been going to the same concierge group for 17 years now, I've never sat in the waiting room. You walk in, take it right back. I've gone to the dermatologist, and I've sat in the waiting room for 45 minutes to an hour. So
oh, yeah.
I told her you're going to have two completely different experiences today.
And it's kind of, yeah. And the question is, if you can afford to fly first class, why wouldn't you? You know, who are you saving it for? So, and you know, we had, I'm on a foundation down in Florida, and I made it clear to the people. I said, you know, we get a lot of service. They come down and visit us quarterly. They do a nice job. We got 22.98% percent return on our money this year with an 80-20 portfolio, and our net is 22.38. I said, for me, it's worth it, guys. Okay? So I don't want to hear about S&P 500 and index fund anymore. It's worth it. So anyway, people, I think, don't really get that it's a fraction of a percent. So that too, I think, is kind of powerful. Anyway, well, thanks, guys. Talk
All right,
soon.
Thanks,
thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay.